Hey guys, don't forget to check out the Street Cop Training Conference 2023, April 23rd through the 28th, Nashville, Tennessee. The Gaylord at Opry, what a center, what a place. We have amazing speakers, amazing training, five of the most impactful days of your career. Check it out at streetcop.com. You do not want to miss out. There is a room code available for a discounted room. Sign up now at streetcop.com. 111-110. Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino, and today I have with me a really cool fucking guest, and a lot of you are familiar with his content. He's a social media influencer, and you've seen him all over. And Mike the Cop can give you his own explanation of who he is. And I think people probably want to know more about you, and it's interesting to hear what your story was and how you ended up to be where you are. And without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Mike the Cop.
What's up, dude?
Wow, what a grand re-entrance on top of my thing. Dude, tell me about your law enforcement career. That's what I'm curious about to start.
That started in the, I guess, technically the spring when I was doing my academy, like state entrance exams. I don't know how it works for you all. Here in Michigan, there is like a pre-entrance. So we have MCOLs, the Michigan Commission on Law Enforcement Standards or whatever. And so there's a pre-exam. So anybody that wants to get into law enforcement, kind of like step one is you got to go take this physical and written, and you got to get your passing scores. So I guess that started spring of 2009 for me. Entered the academy we started in July of 2009. And then I went from there to the road. And yeah, that's where it all began. I worked at one department for a little under 3 years, got laid off, and hopped from there to one for like 6 weeks, and then into the next, you know, main department that I had applied to a bunch, obviously knowing that the layoff was coming. And then I worked at the next department for a little over 5 years, I think. And then left full-time policing in the summer of 2017 and stayed part-time, keep my cert, keep involved. So I was like a weekend warrior, right back to weekend midnights at some other part-time departments, and hated my life going from working my way up the ladder to being, you know, a day shift guy to back to the weekends. And after once the COVID stuff started, I knew that was my time to go. So July 2nd, I think, was of 2020 was my final day as a cop. So if in Michigan, you got 2 years to stay certified. So if I don't get hired by July 2nd somewhere, then it's done for me. I'd have to go back to like an academy or something.
you have 30 days left, Mike.
Yeah, I better hurry up.
Yeah, we have a support system over here. We can try to get some applications in for you.
Yeah, no, I don't. I do not. I enjoy being able to continue to advocate and encourage cops. Hopefully, I know there's a lot of cops that can't stand my guts. That's okay, but I try to encourage them. Try to help from the outside. And I still feel that what I'm doing has a positive impact on the policing culture and the cops themselves still on the job. And I enjoy that, but I don't miss it.
Well, yeah, I mean, what they need the most a lot of times is a voice, and I think several different voices. And I think you're a good voice in the content you put out about, hey, this is common sense shit that these people are doing. And you know, it's the world is ridiculous, which is basically what I get from your content.
Yeah. America's dumbing down. That's for sure.
Well, I don't know if they've dumbing down or we're just being exposed of the dumbness more. I think it's always been a dumbing.
Yeah, that's a good point. You may be like, have we always just been this dumb and the internet just showed us or what? Yeah.
I think that's exactly right. You know, so people, we were at an event and there was a speaker and this guy is going on and on and on and about how bad the world is and this and that and blah, blah, the world's going down. And I leaned over to a guy that works with us and I said, you know, it's interesting how bad the world is. I remember about 70 years ago, there was a guy named Hitler who was pretty bad. Yeah. So as bad as the world is, we're not losing 85 million people this year.
Yeah.
Because they did during World War II. And he started laughing. I go, you know what was really bad too? The Black Plague was bad. Yeah. We don't have that anymore. So I get that things aren't perfect, but I also know that the world is a beautiful place as well. And when you sort of have a perspective change on that.
Yeah, that's a good perspective to have for sure.
Yeah, if not, you'll be fucking losing your mind scrolling on CNN.
Yeah, if you ain't kidding. That's where I spend my time.
Dude, I mean, you started in 2009. So why the itch? You were obviously a little bit older at that time, correct?
Yeah, I was 33, I think.
Right. How old it was. A little bit older for most cops to come on the job.
Yeah, for me, I already had a, you know, a family, four kids.
Wow.
I had already had, you know, a variety of jobs. I was more of like an entrepreneur, you know, scratch that itch kind of guy, just, but there was never really an opportunity, even though wanting to go into policing was something, it was always sort of like on the side, you know, like one of those things where like, man, I'd really like to do that. But I never really was able to jump through any good windows or doors of opportunity to make that happen sensibly. So I had had a business that I was running and the economy took a massive dump in, you know, 2008 to 2010 from all the mortgage crisis nonsense. And so my business was taking a little bit of a hit from that. And I was like, you know what? I've got this money set aside. I've got, you know, my family can survive for the next year. So let's do it. You know, now's as good a time as any to do something that you've always wanted to do. And I can do it responsibly. I'm not putting my family at risk. I can go ahead and go to the academy, get in it with the department and get moving. And that's what I did. So
that's awesome. Why the layoffs? Was it the economy at that time?
No, it was just corruption. Oh. Surprising. it was just political corruption. I was actually hired on a cops grant. And they the union president had approached me and was like, you know, they've already spent the money that they hired you with. And I'm like, no, they haven't. You know, they told me like I was golden, you know. And so the open door policy of the chief, you know, me being new and naive, I walk down and knock on the open door and like, hey, you know, he was the director of public safety or whatever. I'm like, I'm getting wind that the money that was used to hire me is already spent. And he's like, no, that we don't even get that money unless you're here for three of the 4 years of the cops grant. And we've got these people set to retire. So you'll be fine even by attrition. I'm like, oh, okay. So then I'm back talking to the union guys and I'm like, hey, you know, the director said this, but the other thing, he's like, man, I don't care what the director said. I'm telling you that money's gone. And I'm like, they're like, don't plan on being here forever because there's going to come a day when they're going to have to answer for this. I'm like, oh, okay. I don't know what I know. I just get to work, you know? And, sure enough, a couple years later, then, it's getting passed around at our roll calls, you know, it's like, oh, here's the city council notes from the meeting. And sure enough, man, the irony of it all was that I think it was 12 or 13 of us. I can't remember the exact number, were laid off. It went deep. It went 10 years.
Wow.
10 years deep. And we were laid off because the new public safety building that they were building was about, I don't know, $2.5 or $3 million over budget, and they already committed to it. So the irony is you lost a dozen public safety workers so that you could keep your new public safety building. And if that's not, you know, interesting slap in the face, I don't know what was. I went back later for a deposition on a case that I was involved in at that department. And I saw I wrote an email and sent it off. And while my sergeant was shaking his head over my shoulder, trying to convince me not to burn any bridges, but I sent an email off like, hey, I'm glad to not be working here when I get laid off. You guys are liars. I don't want to work for liars. If there's a callback, don't put me on that list. I wouldn't work for you if I got paid again, you know, you know, blah, blah, blah. Everybody's just like, man, you just can't keep your mouth shut, can you? Hence the reason I'm on the internet, you know? So go through that. I saw that same guy who is now the guy in charge at that deposition in the hallway. I'm like, hey man, I went into the bathroom, dude, take a leak. And I mean, you're talking cool stone floors and wall to the 10-foot ceiling walls, nice stalls, showers, nice ones, not what we had before in the basement. So everything was nice. I was like, man, you should really name at least like a bathroom stall after me. Like everybody should get a little plaque above every part of this new bathroom, you know, that we have with all the showers, you know, since we don't work here anymore. Some of the guys went back, but most of us moved on. But yeah, layoffs, all politics, man.
Yeah, it's, you know, there is a significant difference, and you know, in private industry versus being public industry because of the accountability of funds and misappropriation. It's not their money. They don't care. Mm-hmm. They'll keep getting paid no matter what. In private industry, if you suck, you're out.
Yep.
That's just the bottom line.
Yep.
So if you're not good, nobody's paying you.
Yeah. It'd be nice if there was some way to have a hybrid on that, wouldn't it?
Yeah. But then it would make it fun. And then people would actually win when they don't deserve to.
Yeah.
So I like the competition of the best win in this, because it really is nice and refreshing to come into an industry where there's actually rules that you can follow. Because in law enforcement, you just go in and they're like, hey, how do you get promoted? Like, well, as of today, you've got to blow that guy for about 3 years and that'll probably get you somewhere. And then like 2 weeks later, you're like, I've been blowing him. Like, now what? Well, that's not how you do it anymore. He's leaving. Now you got to do this. Well, I work hard and I'm good at my job and I have good leadership skills and I can figure things out pretty quickly and I'm nice to people. Yeah, no. We're not looking for that in leadership. We're, you're going to have
hey, to. I collared like 7 felonies this month. Yeah, but you know, your traffic stops were down. So that's not good.
I had my review, my annual review, sit down with my lieutenant. He's a good friend of mine. I've worked with him for years. He was my sergeant when I first came on. And he said, hey, I got to do your annual review and you have made more arrests in this agency tenfold than a big agency, 200 guys. You know, your numbers are ridiculous. You have the most felony cases. You have the most this, you have the most that. Because you don't have any special checks. You're the lowest in the agency on special checks. And I went, because I don't fucking do special checks. And he said, well, why? I go, because I'm actually doing police work. I'm not accounting for my time by driving around buildings saying I'm looking at the windows with a spotlight.
Right.
That's what they're doing to account for their time. Mm-hmm. I do police work. And he said,
we all know that they park in that parking lot for 10 minutes. They don't look at anything. And then they put it on their special checks.
Yeah, dude. Right? Like, this is the time when they talk to their gumata because their wife thinks they're at work.
That's funny.
So he goes, well, can you just do like one per shift just so I don't have to hear it from the top? I go, the thought that you're going to have to hear this from the top, from your top producer, is insane to me.
Yeah.
Like, would you like me to just do what everybody else does and not go out and do what you guys like me doing? I just don't understand what the mentality is. Well, they're going to say something because it's not well-rounded. And I just said,
we had a similar thing. We did handwritten logs and we did the same thing, you know, building checks or whatever. I know exactly what you're talking about. And they expected, you know, for your evaluations, a certain pace of that. And since we did handwritten logs, one of the lieutenant's job was to input the handwritten logs into digital format. So this is like it was in a very old school department and then they're transitioning to digital stuff. So you handwrite your log, but even though we've completely had the capability in our computers to digitize it, we still handwrote it, but he had to put them in. Well, then I went to this evaluation where it was like, you're getting fives, you know, whatever the best score in all these different areas, but you know, not enough of these. I'm like, oh, not enough, eh? And that's when I knew I was getting laid off anyway. So I wasn't about ready to stick my neck out for much. And so I would fill pages of building checks, every address. I would just get out of my car and I'd walk, write the address down. And I would do it for hours. And then it'd be pages of building checks to have to enter into the computer. Mm-hmm. I was like, you want building checks? Oh, you got building checks.
I love it. I love it. How about this? I know that you started getting some recognition earlier on. Were you actually getting recognized at work as a cop from your social media stuff?
That definitely happened a couple times. Once on a domestic you know, a few others on calls. Thank God it was never anything that really had any impact on anything. But yeah, it happened eventually. Arrested somebody one time that told me that he liked my videos from the back seat.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which ended up being a good icebreaker because, you know, I mean, you treat everybody with as much respect as possible, even though you're, you know, sometimes you got to go to jail. You got consequences to your actions, but it doesn't mean you're like the epitome of evil or something like that because you did something stupid and got caught. But yeah, that happened a few times. So, but that was more because Mike the Cop didn't officially start until February of 2016. And I left full-time policing in the summer of 2017. So there was like a year and change, I guess, where things were really taking off. So I think that by the time that a lot more growth had happened, I was already doing the part-time thing on midnights. And the only people that knew me were cops because I went to Sleepy Town, USA for the part-time midnight gig and I didn't do much.
Yo, did your agency ever give you a hard time about the Mike the Cop social media stuff?
No, I got super lucky. I think I was headed that way. And it even came up after I got out from that department. I was really blessed, man. The guy in charge of everything at technically the third department, because I was at a small department for like 6 weeks until I got a real police job at a full size department, everything. And I was just blessed, man. I got hired there in 2012. And then 2014, I started doing some blogging and I started a website called Cop Life. And so I was just writing. My face wasn't on the internet at all. And I was just putting out blog entries, early Facebook days, had a Facebook page, that kind of stuff. And eventually we came to the point to where we started a nonprofit, myself and another lady named Tristy, and we started humanizing the badge. And when we started that, we didn't know what we were doing. We were just like, well, we want to do that. We want to humanize the badge and we want to be here on the playground of ideas and speak truth, you know, into these situations. And so my department saw me doing these things behind this, like I said, my face was never out there or anything like that. I was from 2014 till we started humanizing the badge in 2015. And then through 2015, again, Mike the Cop didn't come onto the scene until February of 2016. So they saw me doing things for 2 years that I was making, you know, wasn't making a profit on. I was just trying to do good things, you know, and that earned a lot of trust that I put a lot of trust in the bank, as it were, with leadership there. I think I didn't have to ask for permission to write something on the internet. I wasn't representing my department, all that stuff. So then when toward the end of 2015, when we were like, well, video is really starting to be a thing. I saw Officer Daniels online on Vine and I was like, dude, if this is funny, this is hilarious. And my kids were the ones that really brought it to my attention. So I'm like, and I know they're cop kids, so they're going to be more attuned to police type things. But I'm like, if kids are paying attention to a cop like that on video, maybe there's something to this. And so we started rolling out some videos later 2015 and they just took off. And so I was like, man, there's something to this. And that's when I decided to do the Mike the Cop thing separate so that me personally wasn't dominating the organization. I didn't want that. And that's when that took off. But they gave me a lot of rope. And I asked, I went to the admin and said, hey, I want to start doing more video. They said, just keep the don't have a patch on, you know, like you're not representing the department. Keep it positive. That was our social media policy, was to represent the department and law enforcement in a positive light. Like that was basically the policy. So I followed that and I had a sergeant that I actually started doing periscopes back in the day before Twitter bought them or whatever. And I was what we would do is we would hump calls from 7 p.m. to like 2-3 in the morning. We're a pretty fairly busy department. And so about 3, things would start to die down. You'd find a spot at DPW or a back lot, and you'd start writing your reports. And all I did was I would set the phone in the middle console of the patrol car and go live. And while I type my reports, I had my partner in the, he never wanted to be on there. So I called him Officer Butthurt. He never appeared on camera, but his voice did, you know, and I would just tell people like what calls I went on that night, and they would ask questions all while I'm just kind of like pecking away at my reports or my partner is and killing time basically. And that's what started that. And I had a sergeant that was real cool who, after I did that a couple of times, he was watching and he's like, "Hey, make sure that you tag out for lunch when you do that. I know like you're eating and you've already done your work. Like I'm not dogging you, but make sure that you're covering your basis. Like you're not on public time doing something on the internet." Smart move. So always did that from there on out. And my public safety director saw me one day in the hallway and was like, "Hey, saw one of your videos the other day." And I'm like, "Oh man, here it comes," right? Like they're going to shut this down. And he was talking about how he heard his kids laughing in the kitchen, and he went in there and they were watching. They're like, "Dad, look at this cop's video." And he's like, "Hey, that guy works for me." Like this is the stuff he was talking about doing. And he said, if you're getting my kids to look at content like that and make them laugh and engage them, and it's pro police, keep doing what you're doing." And I just, all the slack was in the rope, you know, at that point. And later on, there was some administrative changes and they weren't quite as keen, but they also knew it was almost kind of too big to stop at that point. And there was a conversation one day where it was like, what would you do if we told you couldn't do that anymore? I said, I would set my badge and gun on the desk and walk outside and make a video about you telling me I couldn't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And it was like, all right, it was like the, you know, the old West standoff, like, you'll say when, you know, like, cause this would be a good business move for me at this point. Like, you know, not for you so much. And, so it was a little tension. And then even afterward, we had filmed some videos with permission of the city with some cops in uniform for a fundraiser for police wives, of fallen officers. So spouses, we did a fundraiser where we ate like the world's hottest chocolate bar or something like that. It was myself and 2 other cops from my department, and they were in uniform, and we did that on purpose. So it was like bringing in, I did it once with the police department, once with fire department, and we had permission. We had permission from the public safety director at the time. We had permission from the mayor at the time. And that came back to where you have to take that video down, because they're going to suspend these guys. And I knew that they couldn't, because I was a union representative at one point. I'm like, you can't suspend them. Like, that's not going to happen, because it's already been over a year. You can't discipline somebody for something that we already have permission for, first, and second, that is over a year old. So there started to be these little battles, and I did take some content down to take the heat off of some of the guys still on the road. That was less than a year old and stuff like that. But so everything just lined up for me.
That's good, man. It's great. It's a great thing to see. And obviously you have a entrepreneurial bug. What was the organization that you guys were doing the fundraiser for? I think they deserve a little light to be shed on them.
I think at the time, and this would have been going back to like 2016, maybe, it was a police wives organization out of Las Vegas. I think the Vegas Strong movement had started after the shooting there. And we had been out there, and they were doing a fundraiser to give a charm to the spouse of every fallen officer, for like a necklace or something like that year. And I think that video raised like somewhere between $10,000 and $16,000 or something like that for us doing that, like on live stream donations or something. And it was just a pass through to that organization.
It's awesome. We support and try to support a lot of those organizations. So anytime we can shed light on them and let people know that they exist, if you have interest in donating to them, they're around. I was going to say we had commonality there too. What are the top 3 deficiencies in your perspective in policing?
Deficiency number 1 is leadership. And I know that that's broad, so let me try to be specific about it. I think the key problem right now when it comes to leadership is it's a two-handed problem. In the one hand, you have leadership that chase perception. And I think that that's killing the profession. Perception is not reality, no matter how bad anybody wants it to be. It's absolutely not. And leadership chasing perception and chasing optics is killing this job. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's always refreshing to have leaders that don't care about the optics. They aren't chasing perception. They're chasing professionalism. They're chasing the job, right? They're chasing what is it that we are supposed to be about as law enforcement officers. That's what we do. We don't pander. We don't bow. We don't bend. We certainly don't break. We just do the job. That's it. And I think that in that hand of leadership chasing perception is a death knell. It's super discouraging when I see that. And I think that's a huge growing problem. Second, the other hand of leadership is going to be the politics of it all. And I think they're kind of related, but I think they're distinct in another sense. You got a sheriff, they're elected by the people. Hey, we want you. We're directly voting you, sheriff, to lead these men and women to enforce our laws. I think that that's a much better arrangement than it is to have a politically appointed chief of police that is really simply a tug of war piece between a police department and the politicians. And it could literally go either way. Sometimes you have a really well-qualified, well-experienced police chief that maybe came up through the ranks, did the job, did it well, and happens to be there. And they view their job every day is to pick up the shield and walk over to City Hall and hold a line and keep the politicians away from the cops, right? And I think that's your good police chief. And then you've got others that the shield is on the other side, and they really belong in City Hall, and then they come over to the PD with a shield and they're trying to keep the cops out of City Hall, you know? And I think that political game is just it's a dangerous one. It's poisonous. And it's the delusion that is crushed, the dreams that are crushed of almost universally by every cop in about year 3 to 5, where they realize I'm not changing the world here. That's why not? What's keeping us from making a bigger impact? And then you look over and you see the word City Hall and you're like, oh yeah. And then you realize, the people in this area of the building that we know as admin, they really aren't looking out for my best interest most of the time, are they? And this is when the dreams begin to shatter.
I will say on top of that, it is a sad truth. I always regard that if the public actually knew what went on in the four walls of a police department or a municipal building, they would probably be in shock. I don't know if it caused uproar, but people are completely confused on what actually goes on at a police department. It's sad to watch people's dreams, these guys who are and girls who came in with the perfect attitude. They could have been a great piece to make the world a better place. They had phenomenal potential, and it's squashed by people in other positions who just take dreams and shred them.
Yep.
For their own personal gain.
For sure. Now,
on the other side of thing, I think we deserve to at least acknowledge that there are cities and police command staff that are phenomenal.
Absolutely.
And sometimes as human beings, we forget to look at the other side. People say to me, the job's dead. I go, well, where do you work? NYPD? Yeah, the job's dead. I'm with you. Right? You work at Philly? I get it. Yeah. Why would you work there? but I can show you 29 chiefs in the state of New Jersey who have interdiction teams, put three canines on the road. Their town loves them. Their town council supports the work. They got them out on the highway, knocking down significant seizures and loads. They are quick to respond. They are not afraid. They have good support. But I can also show you that a bunch of other ones that aren't like that.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen it at the same department, right? Like I was, after my first experience with crooked leadership lying to my face, I remember really early on, I think I was shortly, you know, I had to go through the motions of an FTO program again, like with three some years on or whatever, like, and they were good to me. But I remember we were like banging a door with a house full of a bunch of heroin addicts, you know, strung out. So we're getting ready to hit this door. And I see the chief of police pull up in his vehicle and get out, and he's got a ram. And I'm like, what is happening right now? I was just mind blown. And like, I should be focused on the fact that I'm getting ready to go into this den of, you know, opiates or whatever. And I'm like, all I could focus on was like, holy shit, I'm hitting the door with the chief of police, man. This is weird. And that was the kind of like, so I've seen, and then the same department, right? Like I saw them juxtaposed, like great leadership, servant leadership, as it were, like leading from the front and then leading from an office, you know, big difference.
The only glimmer of hope is that leadership as a principle can be learned. The question is are they subscribing or enrolling into learning how to be a good leader, a great leader?
Yeah.
And unfortunately in this world, people, again, I'm being negative to start with, but there are a lot of selfish people and they don't have to do it. Why do they? Because there's no duty to perform. I mean, really, there's no, you're going to, no matter what, just show up, don't get in trouble. We'll pay you every 2 weeks. So there's no, you know, it's not like that in private industry. If you showed up at this company and you suck, you're gone.
Yeah.
Like, I don't tell you, like, we're not keeping you. Like, you have to be able to contribute here and earn what you're being paid. And we take care of people wonderfully at this organization, but that's why I like, you know, private industry, because it really removes, don't get me wrong. I know there's nepotism in bigger, larger companies.
Sure.
But I'm a very clear example of how anti-nepotism I am here and how much I build this company on meritocracy. My cousin, who was my first employee, who's in the next room over from this podcast studio we're sitting in, she's same age as me. We're best friends our whole lives. Godfather, godmother to my first born child, you know, the whole nine. I mean, and it's clear as day there's no nepotism here, because she wasn't moved up and put in places because of who she is and how she's related to the boss.
Yeah.
And I make that very clear that we will reward on meritocracy here nonstop. And we have a wonderful culture of human beings. And I do that to display an example to the rest of the world of, look how well this works when it's done the way it probably should be done. And I'm not tooting my own horn. I learned it. I'm reading leadership books. I'm into leadership YouTube videos and podcasts. I'm constantly, what can I do better here to make their lives better and overall great for this company and great for the world?
Yeah, you can't go wrong with treating other people how you'd like to be treated and investing in other people and giving them your time and energy. You can't go wrong with that.
First of all, I always tell people, if you work here and I know that I'm have intention of retaining you for your life, I'm going to invest heavily in you financially, time, emotionally. If you're not, I'm not spending any more time with you. This is just not the place for you. And sometimes it's just a mismatch. It just happens.
Yeah.
You know, when we teach classes, I often say to people, look, I don't have every answer to leadership, but we could probably start with compassion and mutual respect for one another. And that's even from patrol officer to patrol officer. And I use the example of every time somebody gets jammed up, or if somebody's got a real hot one cooking in the internal affairs oven, think about how all of you act towards that person. You're literally shunning them out of the group with the anticipation of, they're in trouble. They fucked up. Hey, guess what, homeboy? It could have been you too. And I got to tell you, your time's coming. And maybe, just maybe, when you're sitting there looking at some real significant internal affair discipline, you probably want a few of your friends to reach out and say, hey, I know you can't talk, but are you good, man?
Yeah.
Time will go on. This will be water under the bridge. You'll have a fruitful career. You'll still be able to get promoted. I know you fucked up. We all do the same thing. You know, you made a mistake. We get it. I've been there. I'm fortunate enough that, you know, nothing happened. are we saying that? Or are you shunning people? And that's where the conversation begins of, if you like this profession to improve and get better, which I believe it can, it's not hard to start implementing some different ways of behaving towards one another. For admin sure. down to the admin and side to side.
Yeah.
And you'd be surprised what begins to happen when you start having mutual respect and compassion and not having judgment for one another of what they did, why they did it. You know, it's just, it's wild to me.
Yeah, that's good, man. That's real good.
Thank you. And I think I swear to God, I have to say this. I really believe, like, at least us as a company and other influencers and people who understand what we're saying, I think we're making progress, maybe little progress, but I think we're making progress. And I'm, you know, delighted to wake up and elated to come here and try to put out good information to help everybody do the job better and feel better mentally as well.
Yeah, for sure.
What was the next thing you think even if you want to curtail it down to two things, next thing on why policing is, or a detrimental reason to why policing is in the state that it is?
Yeah, the next biggest thing for me, and I'd have to take a step back objectively to see if I should rank this number two or number three. But for me, I would say police departments being willing to move past that this is the way we've always done it, to train their officers for the way that we need to do it now. Mm-hmm. And I think that for me, a big part of that is both physical fitness, preparedness for the job, and combatives and skills related to the job, right? So you've got the foundation of physical fitness, and then you've got the skills related to that, defensive tactics, firearms, secondary weapons, special, any other specialized training. You mentioned interdiction earlier, whether it's interdiction or whether it's emergency medical response or breaching or whatever it is, increasing your skill levels across, you know, your interests in law enforcement.
And so training.
Yes, training. And I know that, like, to the average person that would say cops just need more training, I won't speak for you, but I don't think that you and I mean the same thing as the average Joe seeing stuff on the news saying, yeah, the cops need better training. I don't think that they know what that means,
right?
Or the kind of training that's necessary.
Correct.
To do that. So, you know, for me, I think a lot of this stuff is about changing a culture from this is the way we've always done it to the way that we need to do it. And there is zero reason, like, you've already hit the nail on the head when it comes to, like, in the private sector, if you can't produce, you're out, right? So what we have to recognize what it is that we want our officers to produce in the first place, right? Is it tickets? Is it revenue, or is it something else? I mean, we have to ask ourselves that question. But if we expect officers to be tactical athletes, which we should expect a certain standard of fitness, which we do to get in, but we typically don't to stay in. But if that's a requirement of the job, you should be paid to do it.
Correct.
You should have time in your shift. And I know departments that do this, and kudos to them that are on the edge of doing this. They are providing that hour time where they get to go to the gym in the department. Even better if they've got someone equipped to tell them what to do there, so they're not just random about it, but there's a program that they're following, and they're on the clock. They get to go downstairs, drop the vest, drop the gun belt, do something physical that improves them for the job. Likewise, have someone equipped and trained to prepare them. You can't go to your annual DT class for 8 hours, learn a bunch of random techniques from Rex
Kwon Do. Get back.
And then expect that you're going to be able to perform those things when it counts, right? You fall to your lowest level of training. So that all of this stuff that we're talking about needs to be on the job, not hope that someone takes their life, their life, the hopes of their families, of them coming home, their community, seriously enough to do it on their own. But we should have a high standard of what's expected to maintain a certain physical fitness and a certain skill level that is measurable. I'm not talking about every cop needing to be a Navy SEAL here, but I am talking about a certain standard that should be able to be met, right? And I don't really want daddy government involved. I think it should be that community determining that. But I think that that's a huge, huge issue for us in the profession. And we're going to have less and less good cops that take that kind of stuff seriously because people who do take that seriously don't want to be part of organizations that don't. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of departments are seeing a decline and they're like, why can't we get anybody? Well, because you have sloths working for your department. When they come to interview you, they see three sloths sitting across from them. They're not inspired. That's why. Mm-hmm. They're not inspired to come do the job with you because why would they? You know, so we need to change that culture, I think, not to treat it as if it's the military, but I mean, treat it as though it's something special, something significant that requires something of me. But if we're going to require it, it's like, you have to wear a uniform. So good luck, go buy one. That's dumb, right? Mm-hmm. You have to carry a gun. So go buy one. And there's departments that do that, small departments. Like you got to buy your own gun. Like what? Like you're requiring me to do this. You should provide the tools. If we're requiring that, you may need to run into a school and pull people out. You may need to climb this 12-foot barrier. You may need to drag your partner or carry your partner somewhere. Like if we require and expect that of them, we better train them for that. And if we're not, how are we hoping that mass casualty or chaotic events or difficult circumstances that they overcome these if we're not training to them? And I think that's a huge issue. So yeah, number two.
No, it's a good response. And you know, I actually had an interaction last night and I was told that at this event that I went to, hey, this guy over here is very fond of you. He watches your videos a lot. He, you know, and they said in cop language. So
hope you didn't look over and see him pantsless or anything.
Right. Well, yeah. Well, they said like, no, this guy wants you. They actually said, this guy wants you to do things to his face. I said, okay, well, so I said, you know, hey man, nice to meet you. Da-da-da. Have you thought about coming to class? And he's like, well, yeah, I want to go. And I'm like, well, there's one actually next Monday in this area. And he's like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, I've told you consume our content. And I was like, yeah, I love it. I'm like, you realize if you come to class, you have a significant increase in probably not dying in the line of duty. So what's your life worth? Mm-hmm. And often I hear this thing of, well, I've been putting in for it, but they won't send me. Folks, there are times in life where you have to send yourself. Mm-hmm. This is not a business pitch. If I believe my product was crappy, or if it actually was crappy, we wouldn't have the traction that we have nationally in the United States, where people are essentially, a key to a good business is word of mouth. Now, we show you what our quality is through our social media platforms and platforms like this podcast, but I often find it very interesting that people will go to college and spend $75,000 to $100,000 on a piece of paper that gave their mother the ability to brag to her friends or get a fucking bumper sticker and pretty much nothing else.
Yeah.
But now you're in a profession and you're willing to invest, I don't know, a couple $100 to $1,000 to have a completely different career and to maybe not die. And when I say maybe not die, not only are we telling you that, we're actually showing you videos of people who came to class on our social platform saying, here, look, he didn't die. Because 2 weeks earlier, he learned to stay off the driver's side of the car. Yeah. So here's a video of a guy coming to class using what he learned, paid his own way, and he's alive now. So what's your life worth? So there has to be some, and you could let me know if you agree with this, some accountability on part of the police officer, recognizing that maybe there isn't funds for everything that they need. You're going to have to step up and invest in yourself a little bit. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, you have to do what you have to do, right? In that sense, I do believe that these departments need to step up. But if you're choosing to do this job and your department's not stepping up, again, that's a great question. What is your life worth? You know, you should want this for yourself, but if you don't, do you want it for your family? Do you want it for your partner? Right? Like, Do you want to be the guy that when your partner chirps up on the radio that they need help, that you can't be the, you can't do it? You can't rise to that occasion? Or is your partner worth it? Maybe you don't have a great sense of self-worth and self-esteem. Is your part, do you value your partner? You know, is the community member that's going to be in need, are they worth your effort? Are they worth the extra effort? And everybody's got to be able to obviously find a healthy rhythm and a healthy balance to these things. And I understand the challenge of having little kids and trying to go extra outside of your work time and overtime and everything else that you got going on. I get that. But we all got to choose our path, you know, and those choices aren't easy. I don't think that they are, but they got to be made for sure.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And, you know, we know what our job is. And I say this often to people, we had options, and our options were, we know a lot of this. We could decide to share it with the world, or we could just not said anything, like what most people do. But we've decided, at least at this organization and yourself as well, that, hey, we know some things and we think you should know them. And some people don't want you to know them, but we think you should know them. Yeah. And here's what we have to offer. And guess what? We're going to get mud thrown in our face, shit slung in our direction. That comes with the territory of trying to do something better for the world. And I know for a fact, Mike, and you obviously have more national recognition, that you have to succumb and be subjected to a lot of the negative, fuck, look at my TikTok, dude. You know, yesterday they're like, yo, we got a banger fly and it's at 567,000 views in like 30 hours. And I'm like, that's great. What do the comments look like? Not that I give a fuck. And they're like, well, half are good and half are, yeah, like, and I don't care. We don't do it for the half of people to try to appease why they hate the police. I do it for the other half of people who are going, you know, I didn't know that. And now I'll be able to do my job better.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, what were you told? And I'm going to see if you go right into this one. Before you went to the academy, what were you told about the academy? And this is going to prove a point of mine.
Man, I got to say, I'm not sure where you might go with this. Because for me, I had cop friends of mine that were saying, because I was like, oh, I got to wear business casual to this orientation. And they're like, dude, they're going to smoke you. You don't wear these shoes, you know, this dress shoes. And I'm like, yeah, but they said like business casual. They're like, wear tennis shoes, man. Like, you're going to get smoked. Don't wear dress slacks. Wear as comfortable as you can, because they're going to smoke you. And I'm like, no, they said it was just orientation, half day or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I wore all my dress stuff. And then 4 hours later, after a smoke session from an old man, who has since passed away, great, great guy, you know, smoked us all. And it was a different experience. But yeah, I'm not sure, other than.
How about this one? Does this ring a bell? Hey man, you're going to go to this academy. You're going to learn nothing for 6 months. And then you'll learn the job when you get back here. I think everybody ever met.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I tell people that, because now that I'm one of the things that I do on the side now is this 10-7 project where we're helping cops learn the real estate business.
It's a great fucking name, by the way. I want to give from one marketer to another. What thanks. A great name. I fucking love it. Actually, I actually wrote notes because we're doing the first, we're going to do an outpatient clinic for law enforcement mental health with specialized trauma for first responders. And we're now trying to fuck with a name. I thought of a good one. Then I Google searched. And I'm like, ah, fuck. There's a lady in Missouri who already has this goddamn name. I don't want to fuck with her shit. But yeah, the 10-7 project's a badass name.
Yeah, we're excited about it. And so one of the things that we tell people is, like, going to real estate school is a lot like the academy. It's a hoop. You got to go through it. You're going to learn some basics, but you're not going to use 95% of it. And you don't even need to know.
I mean, real estate's that. I'm under the impression that you run a real estate team now.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. So I had a real estate team as well. And at some point I had to decide what I was going to do. And this is not me trying to drop big names. I happen to get spend time with Gary Vaynerchuk. In a weird way, my connection to him is, my wife's cousin was one of his childhood best friends.
Okay.
So when I started getting into him, I'm like, he's from fucking Edison, New Jersey. I'm like, he knows Marissa. So I called Marissa, my wife's cousin. I go, do you know Gary Vaynerchuk? And she's like, he's one of my best friends. I'm like, shut the fuck up. So I had gotten a couple different occasions to be able to sit down and discuss my life and what I was doing business-wise with him. What people don't realize about real estate is it really has not much to do with real estate. It's a marketing business game.
Yeah, yeah. And we're real big on, I mean, this seems a little side topic, but I mean, we're real big on teaching cops that they already have. If you've been on the road for 2 years, you already have every skill necessary to be a successful real estate agent. Everything that you need to know, you already know it. Like, you don't have to learn how to navigate a stressful situation and stay calm. You don't have to learn how to talk someone down a little bit that's maybe amped up. You don't have to learn to negotiate. You've learned to navigate some of those things. I mean, like, all you've learned to spot a bullshitter. You've learned, you know, you've learned how to look out for somebody that can't look out for themselves, and to be able to take one on the chin for somebody. You've learned everything that's really good about just building relationships with people, connecting with them, invest in that, and your business will grow, you know, like, and you've already learned the skills. You just got to like get a few technical things and not stress about paperwork.
I think every domestic call essentially translates back to attorneys arguing with each other. And you got to step in the middle and go, guys, listen to me. We have buyers who want to buy and sellers who want to sell. And all you guys want to do is put your dicks on the table. Let's all act like adults, finish this process, and move on with life. I mean, I can't tell how many times I've had to step in and calm attorneys down who are playing dick war.
Yeah.
So I'm familiar. That's interesting that you real estate. Do you want to plug any of that real estate stuff, your team?
Sure. I mean, like, if you go to 107project.com, that it's the word 10 and the number 7project.com. I mean, all the information's there. It's whether it's for side hustles or for you want to transition full time, we've got the mix. We've got people who are happy doing 4 or 5 transactions a year and working less overtime. And we've got people who have walked away from the job after 20 years and retired early just because they're doing so well. So, I mean, we run the gambit. And we help you from start to finish in terms of the real estate world. We're going to expand soon, I think, on some level to any service-based business, because the reality is, if you're willing to, I mean, you were talking earlier, compassion and mutual respect, you know, like if you just can do that, you can do any service-based business. Everything that we teach to the real estate agents, we can teach to landscaper or drywaller or doesn't matter what you do. If it's a service-based business, you know, we can help you. But that's it.
You know, I have to ask you this, and this is a little selfish of me, because I know that you are entrepreneurial. Obviously, you have success. Tell me some of your favorite business books, because I know you've got to be educating yourself in business.
I'm trying to think of something recent. You know, the easiest thing, it will tell you what's been influencing me most right now by just looking at my Kindle. And I'll tell you right now.
Are you reading or are you doing audio? I audiobook nonstop.
It depends. I prefer audio when it's the author reading it, because all of the information, the tone is conveyed. The emphasis is there. If it's somebody else, it's kind of hit or miss.
And they actually usually in the audiobooks add a little more icing on the cake because it's sparking thoughts while they're talking, right?
Yeah, for sure. So here's what's been the last good business books that I've been reading. First is YouTube specific. It's called The YouTube Formula, by Daryl Eaves. That's really good. Alex Hormozi's been a good influence lately. His book, $100 Million Offers, is really good. John Rulin, Giftology, that was really, really good. And then before that, I reread Tribes by Seth Godin. That's something that I've come back to a few times.
Seth Godin is literally my messiah.
That's funny. Yeah. I mean, his This Is Marketing, Tribes.
Purple Cow.
Purple Cow, right? Yeah. Yeah.
I actually have an autographed book of Purple Cow.
Nice.
Yeah. To Dennis. I was very, very rewarding.
And then the other two, Organize Tomorrow Today and Atomic Habits. So that is the real-time list of the books in order that I've read back that are having recent influence on me for sure.
So that's recent. How about some of the, if you were somebody saying to you, hey, Mike, I want to get into business. What are a few books you think would help me get going and understanding more about business? And you and I could probably have discussions for hours about what we believe as successful businessmen that people need to actually have to have traction. Mm-hmm. And that's and I'm sure you know at this point, out your age and my age, we're not too far off. that there's a unique formula to somebody actually going to have significant success. I think people can work to their max potential. I have a story about that. I have a relative of mine who's a power washer.
Yeah.
And you would snicker at that, but he makes about $350,000 a year power washing and puts in 10 to 12 hour days, 6.5 days a week.
Yep.
And he's a millionaire and he's a one man show.
Yep.
Power washing.
Mm-hmm. Heck yeah.
If there is a little something more, I know that if with his drive, his work ethic, his personality, there's a little another ingredient that if he would just sprinkle it in, he'd probably have extreme success.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not a conversation for this. If somebody's saying to you, hey, what do I need to kind of look into to get some perspective of how to get into business, how to maybe be an influencer,
mm-hmm.
Where would you suggest they go? Even one good starting book.
The most influential book on my business since I started down this path has been The One Thing by Gary Keller.
Yeah, it's a great book.
That because I think knowing your why, knowing having your focus, that's everything. It doesn't really matter. You know, a lot of times my kids joke because when kids at school or people would say, well, what does your dad do? It's like, I don't know how to answer that. Are you a realtor? Are you a podcaster? Are you an influencer? What is it that you do? Right. So like my one thing is to communicate truth in a way that changes people's minds and lives. That's my thing. Right. So that may be in a Mike the Cop video. It may be on my podcast, Failure to Stop. It may be on my upcoming stuff with 10-7. It could be at I'll be doing MC work this year at a couple different events. It's like I'm communicating there. I may speak to a group of officers doing defensive tactics. To me, those are all things that look different from one perspective and are all the same to me. I wake up and look for ways to communicate. And, that's why I'm on this show. Like this is an opportunity for me to live out my purpose, like why I exist, So the one thing is really, really powerful, I think, to get people's minds right. And if you have your why, you can do all kinds of what's. Crushing It by Gary Vaynerchuk, as you brought him up. That was a good, really good one for me to kind of help me understand from a broad perspective the landscape of being authentic and connecting in a modern world. I'm not a super genius paid marketing guy, but I'm pretty doggone good on the organic side of things. And I really credit a lot of those principles from Gary V. Actually, he was a big influence from a distance. I've never had the honor to meet him or talk to him or whatever.
And I'm going to say this before I say the last three things that I want to say regarding those comments that you made about those books. I actually learned from Gary Vaynerchuk humility and humbleness.
Mm-hmm.
When you meet him in real life, he makes you feel like you're his best friend.
Mm-hmm.
He never makes you feel like he's better than you. That's one thing that I learned from him was his ability to be so humble, such humility. And the guy is just so fucking genuine and it's real. And I know I have friends that work for him. So we're in Jersey, they're in New York.
Yeah.
The one thing was actually the second thing that came across my desk almost right after that conversation with Gary V, when he was like, hey, do the cop thing the most. Mm-hmm. And let go of the real estate stuff. And I'm like, oh, and I can't tell my wife. I'm like, he wants me to just let go of the real estate shit. And she's like, well, what does that mean? I'm like, I don't fucking know, man. Like, I like life the way it is right now. Like we have like a nice car and two nice cars and like a pool and shit. Like I'm into this. Right.
Yeah.
But the one thing actually shifted me. And that was probably one of the top three things that made me just take the leap of faith and go 100%. Into street cop training, which I'm very thankful that I followed my fear and used it as a compass. I will also credit Gary Vaynerchuk to a significant amount of success with this company because I literally ingest him nonstop. Seth Godin is my messiah because of the deep, meaningful thought behind the work and really understanding what that means to be a great human being to other human beings. And then I also wanted to throw in Start With Why by Simon Sinek.
Yep, that's a good one. Yeah.
So another very nice guy. I was fortunate enough to get to meet him. I was kind of getting addicted to business conferences.
Yeah.
Because I realized things started talking to me. Like, I think when you like music and you go see the fucking Rolling Stones, you're like, holy shit, I can't believe I'm seeing them.
Yeah.
For me, that's what it's like when I go to business conferences and Seth Godin's on stage and I'm like, oh my God, this is so fucking good. Right. And I don't really get super starstruck anymore. I've been fortunate enough to get to know some people, but for some odd reason, if I wait too long to talk to Gary Vee in a room that I'm in with him, I'm pretty much can't get words out. And that's really strange for me.
Yeah.
So, but what a great guy. Well, listen, man, I mean, anything else you want to plug? Where can they find you? People haven't heard about Mike the Cop, which there probably isn't too many people that haven't.
My hub is mikethecop.tv. So any of my projects and things that I got going on, it's just a hub site to send people where they want to be interested. And then Failure to Stop podcast is on YouTube. It's on everywhere you can listen to audio. We've got 5 different show styles a week. I don't even host all of them. But yeah, well, I'm getting ready to leave here. I'm going to crush some peanuts, get some protein in me. And then we're going to be going live to cover the Uvalde shooting, and all of the lies and misinformation perceptions out there about that. So we cover, we're true crime genre. Every Friday, we break down a case. We break down something modern, or we break down something classic. You know, this Friday, we're covering the 1980 Norco shootout in California. And like this cool stuff like that, or murder cases. Today will just be a special live episode of that. So the Failure to Stop podcast is like a big, it's where I'm doing a lot of my law enforcement news and culture stuff now, even more than just my own channels and stuff.
It's awesome, dude. And I got to tell you, if people don't say this enough to you, you're doing a really good job. And I know that. What it takes to get a lot of the kind of work that it takes to get to the level that you've gotten yourself to. People are very misunderstanding of what it takes. Cause I think guys like
no you problem. Make just it turn look, on a camera and that's it.
Yeah. I think guys like you make it look very easy. And you know, you have a lot of fortunate dynamics to your life. I'm sure at least your brain allows you to function in a way to be able to balance all these things and create and do all this wonderful stuff. So I'll acknowledge you for that. And I want you to know that there are people out there that know what it takes to do what you're doing. And I give this last piece of advice at every class, and I'm sure you know it already, but I'd like to say to everybody is ignore the noise, focus on your work.
Yeah, man.
It means a lot to a lot of people to continue to show up, and the fucking, you got to learn to shun the non-believers is what it is. And everybody's a human being. So as some of the people who follow me and admire me have to understand that I'm going to make mistakes. Mike will make mistakes, but it doesn't mean our intentions aren't correct or good, but we're humans and we're never going to be perfect all the time. But what we are doing is coming out here with our hearts and our souls, trying to make things better. So we make better things to make things better. And we had options in our lives. And that's one of those options was to not say anything, but we chose to take the road less traveled. The one that does have a lot of bumps and potholes and, you know, there's a lot to be said to something like that. So I want you to know that I'm aware. So I want people to know, you know, what this person is, and you got a really good, genuine side and feel for who Mike the Cop is on this podcast. And I was hoping it could be different than what other people had seen you in other different platforms doing to try to get to the heart of this was a cop. This was a cop who cares. This is somebody who continues to remain in law enforcement. And when I say this was a cop, I feel like I was a cop too, and I still always am going to bleed blue. Yeah. I've dedicated my life to making this job better for everybody, safer, putting more bad guys in jail, and continue to educate and hopefully, you know, diminish the embarrassment at times of this profession due to lack of knowledge and training.
Yeah.
It's a lot of things that we do are not intentional. They're not malicious, but you're held accountable like they are. So we'll mitigate that as much as we possibly can. And I want to thank you for taking the time today to come on our podcast.
I appreciate you thinking of inviting me. I really sincerely appreciate that.
See, there's that good humility right there. That's that good humility right there. So anything else you want to cover before we finish this thing?
No, man, that's good. It's good. Good words from you today too. It's good encouragement. My day's off to a good start.
Awesome, brother. All right, guys, we'll see you next time. Appreciate the continued support here at Street Cop Training. We'll be right back.
I'm in two different businesses. I'm in real estate and I'm a retired police officer. So I'm in law enforcement education, and both are doing really well. And, you know, my heart's in one thing, law enforcement education. But at the same time, I'm getting the calls from real estate because we're doing a lot of Facebook content. We're really following what you do. That's it's really it. So, I mean, we're super fans. I didn't know I was going to be half in the bag when I was talking. Yeah, you know what I mean? Been thinking about this question all week.
It's hard, though.
Yeah. We've been bouncing around. I'm like, what question are you going to ask today? So,
what stands out?
Father of three under four. Wife doesn't work. I managed to bring us from that class to the next class.
So is this a question of I have much more passion for X, but the money's in Y?
There's money in both, and okay. they're really neck and neck, but as we keep going.
So then, fuck, we need to go to the first one, especially because the other one is cyclical. Real estate's an interesting game. Real estate fascinates me for the following reason. The amount of people that don't know anything about the business aren't really that great in business for the last 20, 30 years of their life that get into real estate during good times and make a lot of money is very high. I don't like when B and C and D players make money. It means the market's fake. And what I mean by that is it's just cyclical. You know, the reason yours is very clear to me, and you'll have to decide for you as a man and a family man, but it's so obvious to me that you should put all your energy into the law enforcement part because that's less cyclical. More importantly, you like it more, which will allow you to be better. And more importantly, in about 32 months, the bottom's going to fall out of the real estate market and everybody's going to be like, fuck.
I'm secretly hoping it's happening so I can just break off and go to this. I'm serious. Because as I do more of this, every day I'm like, oh, we're going to come in, we're going to do this, we're going to put content out, guys are asking, questions are coming in. We're exploding. And, you know, then it's like, hey, I want to list and sell my home. I'm going to do $1.4 million in this transaction. I'm like, holy shit, it's $45,000, $50,000. How do you say no when we're not making millions on this end?
Look, I think that it's all about marathons and sprints. You have three under four. It's a whole lot of responsibility, and I'm very empathetic to it.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you the answer I believe with all my heart, which is I would dump the real estate and go full throttle into the other thing. You know, it's my true belief, and it may not allow you to live the same lifestyle over the 36, 48 month window that is coming up, but I have a funny feeling that you'll feel really glad you came to this wine tasting in a 96 month window. I've just seen it over and over. Listen, guys, work's hard. Like, do you know how hard it is? It's hard. It also takes up a lot of our time. When you actually love it, you win. You win in a way that you can't even understand. So, something to think about. I get it.
Thank you.
And I get it. But like, if nothing else, if you're 50-50, at least go 75-25.
I've been trying to leverage a lot of stuff out in real estate and just stay in as much as I can there again.
All right, you're staying.